in every culture, stories are an important way of conveying values. They don't have to be literal historic events. They can be what we would call fictional and still have great power for communicating truth. And Jesus' parables are among the greatest examples of that. They're short stories. They're not stories of events that happened in history, but they convey truth in a deep way. Well, today we have not only this great parable of the gold coins, we also have the story of the mother and the seven sons in the second book of Maccabees, which is, as far as we know, based on historical events, because the Maccabees, the stories in the Maccabees, come from a historical period of persecution, a time when the Jews were really being forced to violate the covenant, and many of them were killed because they refused. So it's hard to tell in this case of this mother, because none of the names are given and the times are, none of the historical details are given, but it seems to be based on a real family. And then we have today's saint, who's a real person, Saint Cecilia, and her story, also embellished perhaps with some legendary details, but is the story of a virgin martyr who has inspired the church ever since. So stories, whether they're clearly fictional, like the parable, or whether they're based in fact, like the story of the woman and her seven sons, or historical figures like Saint Cecilia, they all have this power to inspire, to instruct and inspire. Well, let's look at this gospel. Certainly, it makes us think of Sunday's gospel, right? I mean, Sunday's gospel was about the three servants who received talents. One received five talents, one received two talents, one received one talent, and they were expected to use that money to benefit the owner, the master. In this case, it's 10 servants. They each receive one gold coin, and we hear what happens to the first three of the 10. But the principles at work are the same. The servants receive from the master or from the king, and they are expected to produce based on what they've received. That's our story. That's our story. While we're here in this world, we receive from the Lord great gifts, extraordinary opportunities, whatever, talents, circumstances, abilities, whatever we have. Life itself is a gold coin. We're expected to use it in such a way that it will flourish, multiply. Now, it's supposed to convey to us the generosity of the Lord and the responsibility of his servants. But sometimes people misunderstand these parables as conveying the burden that God puts on us, the burden of expectation. And now we have to do things for him. When we could, if we were free, we could just use the money as we want. That's that distortion of independence from God. In fact, the best thing that the servants can do is use what they're given for the flourishing of the king. That's what not only benefits the king, it benefits the servants themselves. It's not an undue burden, it's an opportunity to participate in the reign of the king. So that, let's set aside that idea that God is being unfair and putting unfair expectations on us and that now we're being forced to produce. No. God is sharing his richness with us and giving us an opportunity to experience the abundance that comes with living like he lives. In the parable, after all, it's clear that the king is not that interested in the money because he doesn't take the money back from the servants who produce more. The only one who loses money is the third guy who didn't do anything with his gold coin. So the servants in the story who hear about this are a little bit confused because the king says, well, take the one away from this guy, this wicked servant, and give that one coin to the man who has 10. And they say, well, Bihar, he already has 10. What's that all about? Seems so unfair, you know, not an equitable distribution of the world's goods. You're impoverishing one person to make a rich man even richer. That doesn't make sense. Maybe not when it comes to money and earthly possessions, but it certainly makes sense in the spiritual life. Because this is how it works with grace. This is how it works with love, too. When we try to hold on to it, when we try to control it or possess it, protect it, we lose it. When we give it, when we empty ourselves, when we invest, when we take the risk of love, we benefit. It multiplies because God is a generous giver. Anybody whom he sees is willing to give, to that person he will give more. That's what this is conveying. So it's not about earthly possessions. You know, on Sunday we celebrated the World Day of the Poor, and Pope Francis, who started this World Day of the Poor, emphasizes constantly the injustices that are resulting in the unequal distribution of the world's goods, and the poor are the ones who suffer from everything. They suffer from natural disasters, they suffer from wars, they suffer from the corruption of governments. They're the ones who bear the brunt of this, and that's not supposed to be that way. But this parable is not about that, so just so we make that distinction. Okay, so we're servants of the Lord. He wants us to share in his, not only to be subjects of his authority, but to participate in his authority. That's why he gives the man who makes five, or who makes 10 more gold coins, he gives him 10 cities. He says, here's someone who I can trust to do what I want to do. Let's improve the situation. And here's a man who will cooperate with me. I'm going to help. I'm going to let him do more. That's how it works. The mother in the first reading and her seven sons have a sense of this. They have a sense of receiving from God and having an opportunity to honor God by means of the sacrifice of their lives. It's quite an inspiring story because it's based on a conviction about life after death, which was not that clear in the time before Jesus rose from the dead. In the Old Testament, it's not always that clear what really happens after death. But this woman very strongly encourages her sons based on the conviction that what they give away, they will receive again. The Creator will give you back both breath and life because you now disregard yourselves for the sake of his law. And she says at the end to the youngest one, do not be afraid of the executioner, but be worthy of your brothers and accept death so that in the time of mercy I may receive you again with them. So she's saying, you're going to receive breath and life and I'm going to receive you again. So this confidence of a victory over death is almost Christian. She's not a Christian, but she seems to have a Christian intuition. Notice how this woman, this is a heroic story. This is a story of the heroism of faith. Notice how the encouragement she gives to her children is not simply on a natural level. Just do this because of your respect for me. Do this because you'll save the reputation of your family. Do this because this is what's expected of you. No, she elevates their thoughts to God. She says, I'm not the one who gave you life. Sure, I carried you in the womb, I nursed you, but I'm not the one who put you together in my womb. That was the Creator. And then to the youngest one, she gives this kind of long, almost philosophical explanation. Look at the heavens. Look at the heavens. Don't look at the executioner. Don't even look at me. Look at the heavens. Look beyond this world. Look at how God does things. He makes things out of nothing. And that's how we came into being. So we don't have to be afraid of any creature if we're putting our trust in the Creator, God. And with that sort of lofty thinking, a lofty kind of pondering, she inspires her sons to sacrifice themselves, to refuse to violate the covenant. But the biggest sacrifice of all is the woman herself, because not only does she lose her life, but she loses 7 of her own sons. Any parent would feel, it's hard to even imagine, actually. It's hard to imagine what a torture the woman went through. Sure, the sons, they were tortured and killed. And that's also unimaginable. But to watch your own children be tortured and killed, that seems worse. And yet, she doesn't waver. That's why she's given to us as an example. In some ways, she's a kind of precursor of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who saw her son tortured and killed and did not waver because of her confidence in God, confidence in the promise of eternal life. Okay, so you see the beauty of these stories. Now let's take a look at today's saint, Saint Cecilia. This is in the early church. She vowed herself to virginity. First of all, being a Christian was already against the law. She was taking that risk of dedicating herself to God, but then she took this further step of vowing her virginity to God. But the culture of the time, her family, they arranged a marriage for her. You know the story, I think. They arranged the marriage for her, and so what's she going to do? She has no choice except to tell her husband-to-be that she has made this vow. And it turns out, whatever was her way of conveying that to the man, or the witness of her life, or the confidence she had in God, it converted him. And then he got martyred. So then he and his brother, I think it is. Then anyway, she gets arrested and ordered to be executed, and the execution gets botched. They try to cut off her head. Instead, they maim her, leave her crippled for 3 days. Now, this is where some of the details are a little bit, I say, perhaps legendary, but the story is, in those 3 days of suffering, of torture, of suffering, she, now we don't know if she actually sang anything, but in her heart, she certainly sang to God. She gave herself to God. She expressed her love, her heart expressed her absolute confidence and love for God. And that's why she's been an inspiration to the church ever since. It's an example, St. Cecilia is an example, of taking the gold coin and using it in such a way that it multiplies more than 10 times. She lives a relatively short life of suffering and produces an abundance of grace for generations to come. We look back at that and we say, wow, here's somebody who really lives according to how she believes. Maybe I could do that. Maybe I could really put my faith into practice. Maybe sacrifice is not so intimidating after all. If this young woman can do it, well, what's a little sacrifice on my part? And isn't God more generous than I am? So if I give him a little, doesn't he multiply it? Yes. Well, that's the direction these readings take us, that we're to invest what we receive, we're to put our trust in the Lord who created everything out of nothing, including ourselves, and who invites us to participate in this glorious creativity, this work of bringing all things under the glorious reign of God, King of the universe.